हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 1 Description of the form of Bhagavan. Page 78. Vyasti means he is the form of Sankarsana. Samasti means he is Vasudeva. His manifest form is the deity. The topic is then summarized. Okay, so this must be from this verse. The Lord is the form of Vasudeva and Sankarsana. He has a manifest form, the deity, and is also an unmanifest form. He is the Lord of all beings, the witness of all beings, the knower of all beings, and is endowed with all shaktis. He is called the Supreme Lord. So Vyasti means the difference, no? The Samasti means together.
The entire thing is Samasti, the complete whole.
Vyasti is the different?
Yeah, different. Becomes different.
Okay. Samasti means together, he said. Vyasti means the difference. So Vyasti then we see is Sankarsana, because like Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Adiruddha, they're manifesting particular different qualities of the guna of the you know of the six opulences. Right? And so those together, that's Vasudeva. Right? So he has the individual aspect and he has all together. Right? So the individual you can point out the different qualities and what they specifically can do or how they're used, and then together that's then how the pastimes go on. Because the Lord then he can do anything, right? He can be involved in any activity. So being involved in any activity, that's then Vasudeva. He performs the pastimes. Right, so then that'll be the Samasti. The pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known, seen, and attained, is called knowledge, and all else is ignorance. Right? So to be able to understand the Lord, his pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is seen, right? By which he reveals himself through his shaktis, right? And by that, then we attain the service of his lotus feet. That's knowledge. Anything else is considered ignorance. Does that make sense? So that means the whole point is that the Ichashakti of the Lord, attaining that position where we're pleasing the Lord, and that kind of aspect, that's knowledge. Then if we're looking at the supporting elements, right, the Sankarsana, Prajumna, Aniruddha are doing, not seeing them connected with Vasudeva, that's ignorance. Does that make sense? That's where ignorance comes from. Does that make sense? Means if we see everything connected to Krishna, that's knowledge. But if we see anything not connected to Krishna, that's ignorance. Though everything is connected. Right? The Kriya and Jnana Shaktis are connected to the Lord, but they're connected by supporting the fulfillment of Krishna's desire, the Icha. So if we see the Kriya and Jnana separate from pleasing the Lord, then that's ignorance. Yes.
According to this logic, it means that we are producing in ignorance.
The ignorance Shakti is there in the Lord. The Ajnana Shakti is there. It just means that we are then under that control of that Shakti. So in other words, basically what it's saying is everything connected to the Lord and seen in connection with the Lord to please in devotion, that is devotion. I mean, that is knowledge. Anything else is ignorance. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful, because we can be dealing with a branch of facts and figures and mechanical skills and all that, but if we don't see it connected to Krishna, its effect will be ignorance. But if we see the same thing connected to Krishna, to please Krishna and devotion, then it takes on the quality of knowledge. So that's the point. Is that knowledge will get you out of the material world. But if not, it's not enough that it's in the category of facts and figures that we can memorize and possibly apply. That doesn't make it knowledge. Does that make sense? You know. So that's the point being made, is that when we see that totality of the Lord, of Vasudeva, and how he performs the path, he has all six opulences. Right? We know that Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha have all six, but they're specifically manifesting two each, because that's the uniqueness of that manifestation. Right? So when we see Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha in the context of Vasudeva, then it takes on the transcendental position. But if we see them separate from Vasudeva, then we're not seeing properly. Does that make sense? Just like anything. Any of the Lord's creation, any of his energies, we don't see it in connection with Krishna, then we're dealing with ignorance. Not that they're in ignorance, we're the ones in ignorance. You know? Does that make sense? Or, yeah? Yes.
To please the Lord, it's not that
difficult. Go ahead.
It's not that difficult, because it's simple and straightforward. However, you know, Munis, they study Shastra for such a long time. So why would they do that?
It means they're trying to gain something. But since they don't have the association of the pure devotees, they don't know actually what to look for. Does that make sense? So they have a goal in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right, and most likely, if they're these great jnanis and say it's going to be moksha, they're trying to free themselves from the miseries of the material world. Everyone's trying to free themselves, but you see, is most are trying to free themselves by removing an obstacle to enjoy. Then those who are intelligent, they understand it's the nature of the material world that you're going to be miserable. Right, so they give up that attempt, and they take up the attempt how to understand what is real knowledge to get ourselves out of the material world. They can elevate themselves up to that position of liberation. So they're out of the field of karma, because it's the field of karma that's giving them the misery. At least that's their understanding. They're not understanding is that, because they're looking at it, remove the misery, then they'll be what will be left is happiness. What we see is that just because I remove an obstacle doesn't mean I have happiness. Right? You know, you have to do something to get happiness. So that's the difficulty. They're not seeing that. So the jnani thinks that if I get rid of all the obstacles, then I'll be liberated. Yeah, you'll be liberated from the problem. Just like, let's say I'm having a difficulty doing something. Like I want to cook and somehow or another I don't find the key to get in the kitchen. And then, you know, I go to the place where it normally is and it's not there. And I ask others and they say, oh, this person took it. And so where is he? Oh, he's supposed to be here, but he's not there because something happened. And so, you know, she just goes on and on and on this, trying to get this key. And so getting the key, then there's that moment of happiness that I remove the obstacle, because that's material happiness. Right? But he still hasn't cooked anything that's actually going to give any pleasure. So that's the mistake that's made. Since material happiness is removing of pain, then it's taken that liberation as the ultimate happiness. Right? Because if I remove a small obstacle, I get a small amount of happiness. I remove a bigger obstacle, I get a bigger amount of happiness. Right? Now, if I remove the obstacle of the material world, then their idea is that I will get the greatest happiness. But all you're doing is, you could say, it's the greatest neutral position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they don't actually know what's happiness. So without the association of the devotees, they won't know. Because even though the Veda will express it, they're thinking with material intelligence. They're using the ascending process. So they can't actually understand. So, but once you come in contact with the devotee, then immediately it becomes, like you said, very simple, very clear, very straightforward. And so these great sages, well, it'll be very easy for them. Like you see the four Kumaras. They come in contact with devotional service. And then immediately they're on the platform of pure devotion. You know, on the Brahma Bhuta platform. So for them, it's an advantage if they do get there, but then they have to give up their attachments to the jnana. And so we find, unless someone actually is liberated, that generally they don't do that. You know, because it's their identity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is anything, when we see it in the context of Krishna, then it becomes special. It becomes spiritual. We don't see it in the context of Krishna, then it's always going to be a problem. Doesn't matter what it is. That's why we have to be very, very careful. That's why Rupa Goswami opens with what's pure devotional service. Understanding that, then all these other points have meaning. Otherwise, then it's like the marriage party, you know, rowing the boat back to their village. Right? So that's the whole thing. When you come in contact with devotees, then this ocean of material suffering becomes reduced down to the size of a calf's footprint. Easy to step over. Anybody can step over a calf's footprint. Right? Even a baby. Right? So that's the thing. It's so perfect. But without it, it is an insurmountable ocean. And the only trouble you get for it is the trouble you put in. I mean, the only benefit you get is the trouble you put in. You know, so they don't really get anything solid. But, yes.
Yes, the other day you mentioned that even for the devotees, although we're trying to practice Shuddha Bhakti, however, we don't know ourselves, the underlying motive could be liberation, because when obstacles come in Krishna consciousness, we're not happy about it. Mm-hmm. And reading Bhagavatam and meditating on those pastimes, we think we don't want to be part of that place because, you know, apparently they suffer and long time. So,
means if we're taking up devotional service, then in the beginning it's always going to have those aspects. You know, of arta, artarti, jigyasu, and jnana, it's always going to have these neophyte aspects. But because the soul, its nature is that of pure devotion, then the concept, then we can relate to it. We appreciate it. And so then we can make that effort for it. It doesn't mean that by our conditioning or impurities we don't have those background aspects. But that's the advantage when you come in contact with the bona fide guru. Then these other things aren't there, though underlying we may be doing it. Just like with a devotee, if you can point out in a way that they, you know, according to their position, they're acting for one of these, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, then generally then they'll be the mentality to try to give that up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because their ultimate goal is pure devotion. So that's why they move forward. But it still requires the association of devotees. That's a constant. We're always in that association. That's how we're advancing. Because we see the, it means we're advancing from previous association, taking that instruction and functioning. And we're also seeing, you know, at present. So that's why it says that one is studying under the bona fide spiritual master. So that's why we have the acharyas have written commentaries on that. Because, like, you know, you read something, and there's some point that sticks out for you, but the whole rest of it you may not remember, and the full, maybe that point that was discussed, you may only remember part of it. But then by studying again, then you understand more, you go deeper because of the service.
Yes.
So in the same way as that, associating with the devotees around us, then we start to see what's correct and what's not. We see that mood, that enthusiasm, you know, trying to go forward in Krishna consciousness. And so we become, in that way, we become inspired. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the point is like this. Now, we can look at it that the situations that we're in, we want nice situations.
Yeah.
But that's the point of religiosity. It produces nice situations.
Right.
right? But the point is it just the situation, or we want to be happy in that situation?
In minds of many, situation means default happiness.
Yes, but when you go through it logically, that's why logic is used in these kind of things, is that we can be in a really nice situation and not be happy.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let us say, you know, you've just gotten away, you know, how you say, the grandchildren have been, or the children have been left at the grandparents' house, and you're going out for a few days, you know, like that. You go to some really fancy place, and, you know, all nice arrangement. You've been working on it for the last 6 months, like that. And you get there, and you're in this fabulous place. You know, you walk in, you know, the bed's there, so then you turn around and do one of those, you know, Jesus falls back on the bed, you know, thing. You know, and, you know. You know, the whole thing like that, and then you know, just as you're getting into it, you know, you've like that, you know, I say you've changed out of the, you say traveling clothes, gone in something, going to go out, then you get a call from the grandparents that, you know, the son, you know, fell over and broke his leg. Now how's that vacation going to go? The situation is perfect. That's already been established. So in other words, happiness is a state of mind, right? Because one situation for one person, that'll be wonderful. Just like, let's say we take someone who is a outdoors person. So you put them out in the middle of some pristine environment, which means they're out in the middle of nowhere. They are in ecstasy. But you take a, you know, someone else who's not an outdoor person, and you know, it could be worse. You know, they'd rather be stuck in traffic in L.A. than there.
With Wi-Fi.
Huh?
At least with Wi-Fi.
At least Wi-Fi. Yeah, if there's no Wi-Fi, okay, then I understand. Let the bears eat me. You know, there's no Wi-Fi. You know. Is that?
Yeah.
So it's a state of mind. So once we understand that, so in the beginning, yes, we don't see that at all because of ignorance. We just think because that's how we're trained. You know, it's like Pavlov and his dogs.
Pavlov, yes.
Yeah, you know, you ring the bell, they salivate, you know, like that. So it's like, you know, nice things you want because you think you'll be happy. That's how advertisement works. Right? You have this, you'll be happy. You know, they don't show... They don't show the continuation of that guy. You know? Like that. You know, so now what to do? You know, it's like he goes down the street, and as he goes down the street, then there's these 25 girls following him because of the deodorant he's using and all that. Great, now what happens when he gets to his car? Now what to do? 25 girls, they're not going to fit in your car. And then if you choose one of them, what are the others going to do? There may be a riot. You know, they might burn you in the car and the one that you got in the car with.
Give them the
deodorant. Yeah, they could just spray it on the head and walk down the street. That's a good solution. So that's the point, is that it's a state of mind. So now... we are, basically speaking, you can say in general, dependent upon a good situation that we appreciate being in. That being in that, then we can experience happiness. Right?
Yeah.
For us, by our particular conditioning, then what specific detail, you know, I mean, it's all going to be in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, right? And having facility for that, basically. So, then it's a matter of when we have one that matches our conditioning, then we're going to be happy, right? But if we don't have those situations, we won't be happy. So we're dependent upon the situation, right? So now what's being talked about is the soul is independent. That means the devotees are independent. So that would mean that the soul being happy, being Atmarama, they're not dependent on the external situation. So that means no matter what situation you're in, you're happy. Right? So far up to this point, we're cool because it still takes on that you know, impersonal kind of aspect.
Right.
Is that wherever I walk, wherever I go, I'm happy. I can see everything in relation to the Supreme. I'm happy. Okay? So that's a step up from the previous one, that I'm dependent upon a material situation, an arrangement. But now you're getting to the level of these great devotees, that even if the situation externally is unfavorable for your conditioning, you're still happy. Right? You're so independent that you can even be in a bad situation and you're happy. So that's what's being pointed out. We're looking, you know what I'm saying? Because we tend to judge everything, which is natural, by our impressions. So that's the idea, by hearing these stories and hearing their attitudes and the moods and prayers and the explanations of the acharyas, that we start to see that there's different perspective, and then we start to see from these different perspectives. Right? So as we study, then Krishna being pleased, we get purified. By being purified, since that's our interest, Krishna will reveal these deeper and deeper levels. So that's then what we're talking about, ananda. Ananda trumps happiness. Right? So happiness in the material world means I have the situation I want, having removed the obstacle. Right? Then, the neutral point, the liberation point, because that's karma. And we can relate a bit to the gyan part, the liberation, in that I'll be happy because there's nothing bothering me. Nothing bothers me. It's all. But I'm looking at it in the way of, very neutral kind of things.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it comes to the point where ananda is, that you go beyond that point by ananda. Because otherwise, by happiness, that's as far as you can get. But if you're on that platform from ananda, then it can go forward to the next. That's why we're saying liberation for some is an end. But for the devotees, it's the situation. And then it goes up from there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to see from a different perspective, because you'll see that's the problem with all other schools other than Vaishnavism, is they're looking at it with this mundane perspective of happiness. And they're just taking it liberation, that's ananda. When, yes, you can be on the platform of ananda if you're a devotee. But if you're not a devotee, you're not on the platform of ananda. You're just on the platform, the most maximum you can get out of happiness, out of sukha. That makes sense? That's why they fall down into philanthropic work and other things, because they need some relationship, some kind of niceness, some qualities. Even though they talk no qualities, they need as a living entity. Because activities are performed by qualities. Right? Before, I think Rupa Goswami is explaining that you have activities, and that's the inspiration. It means you have qualities, because qualities means activity. Right? If Krishna is beautiful, then, and that's attractive, why? Because then you can interact with that beauty. Or Krishna is clever, and so you can interact with that cleverness. Right? Or Krishna is merciful, then you can interact with that. So it's not just he has the quality and that's it. Otherwise, it would be sankarsana. It would be, it would just be the position. But it's attractive because then something can be applied and you can get a result from that. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point. The qualities actually indicate activity. But we're taking it like devotees may say that, or anybody, it's coming from the karmis, that if everybody's nice, then the world will be a nice place. But nice is an experience. So unless there's interaction, how will you get the experience? It's not that just because there's niceness, it's there. Niceness has to be manifest. And you have to have experience of that niceness, then you get the effect of your goal of the happiness. So qualities have to be applied. Just having the quality isn't enough. Because Krishna has all the six opulences unlimitedly. But just having them, he's in the position of Atmarama. It's only when he applies it in rasa that then you have that, his ananda is greater. Right? So he's functioning as Shuka. He's always on the transcendental platform. But the point is just having something isn't enough. You have to be able to use it. Right? And then having it is also not, you have to have the knowledge and skill to be able to apply it. You know what I'm saying? You know, people get something just because it's value. Others say it's value. You get it, but you can't do anything with it. So your happiness is just knowing that I have it. You know, and if I can find someone else who just goes, wow, that's cool, then, you know, you can share their happiness. But if they say, okay, let's do something, you don't know what to do with it. Does that make sense? Good. Yes.
So can we say that on each level we have different kind of happiness? At the level of sat, there's certain happiness, then knowledge gives happiness, and then anand, it's a combined happiness of all of it.
Yes, that's why it says here, Vyasti is samasti means he's Vasudev. Vyasti means it's just one aspect. Or in this case, two out of six.
Okay.
Right? So Vasudev means then it's all together. So that's the aspect, is when you're applying it. Because as Vasudev, he's applying it. He's the Lila Purush. Right? The others are giving the background. So Icha means it's an interaction. Right? So Kriya and Jnana means, Jnana means the situation. Kriya means the knowledge, means the situation, and then the knowledge and mood and attitude and everything. But it's not applied; it's neutral, right? It's static. Then, when you apply that, that's kriya. Then something's accomplished, and that accomplishment—that's the thing. Then can be the medium for happiness, right? But it all depends on the attitude. So the attitude is devotion, and the experience is devotional. The attitude is material, the experience will be material. So the same activity, if the attitude's material, the maximum you can get is happiness. But the attitude's devotional, then you can get ananda. So, because they go together. Means the knowledge and skills applied will get you a physical result. Right? But it's the attitude that when that's applied, that's going to give whatever the particular experience is. You know, it's just like someone does something very expertly, but with so much ego, no one's very happy by it. But they do the same thing without that ego, then people are pleased. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the attitude's the main thing. So If you want to increase the quality of experience, you have to increase the quality of the attitude. Right? So you have to get it through the up to the fifth stage of consciousness. That attitude, that actually brings something important. The others, then they always give a temporary result. Does that work? Okay, we're good? Okay, the pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known. Right? Because we know him through his form. Right? Seen and attained is called knowledge, and all else is ignorance. Vishnu Purana 6.587. He is known by internal realization, seen directly and attained by complete cessation of ignorance. Right? So complete cessation means, when you attain, means now you're able to interact. Right, you're part of the pastime. So there's no ignorance at all. You see everything in connection with him. So when we say is that the devotee is only absorbed in Krishna exclusively and nothing else, that means there's no ignorance. Because where Krishna is, there's no ignorance. There's no Maya. So to that degree you're Krishna conscious, to that degree Maya is removed. Right? So when it's exclusive, then the removal is also, so there's no ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah. That knowledge is paravidya. Ajnana means aparavidya, which is included in ignorance. Right? So part of ignorance, then you have the aparavidya. And it's apara because it can be used in context of Krishna. That's the advantage of the Vedic material knowledge. being apara, it's all in line with the transcendental. Right? It's just like you're taking it that Krishna is there, and then by his desire creates the material world. Okay, so now we're dealing with the transcendental, like that, and then, you know, from his glance, then you get the material creation. Like that, you see it in context of him, it's transcendental. But at the same time, as you get down to the Mahatattva, now you have the modes of nature and all that. Now, if you continue to see with Krishna, you're seeing transcendental knowledge. That'll be Vedanta, you know, the Shankya aspect. But if we're not seeing it connected to Krishna, now it becomes avidya, ignorance. Now, the Vedic, because it's following that line that's given of paravidya all the way down, all the knowledge in the Veda is coming down from paravidya. And you see it in that context, it maintains that nature. Right? But when you get into where it's just talking about the mechanics of things, the situations of things, the interaction of things, what the results those things get, that's called aparavidya. Because it means it's the knowledge that's not transcendental but is usable in the Lord's service, right? So you're having that same line of knowledge because it's a descending process. So that knowledge which descends from the para all the way down to the practical point we're dealing like that, then the mechanical side of it, that's aparavidya. Because all you have to do is apply that in devotion to the Lord and you get the result in devotion. Now, that knowledge which is gained from the ascending process, right? Because it's not connected to the Lord, that's all ignorance. Does that make sense? So, it's all considered within this avidya. But that which is ascending is ignorance. That which is coming, the material that's coming from the descending, that's aparavidya. And the knowledge of this connection with the Lord, that descending knowledge, that's paravidya. Does that make sense? So that's why you see aparavidya is in the middle. Connected to Krishna, even though it may be material knowledge, it's giving you the result of the spiritual because of its connection. But the same knowledge not used in connection with Krishna, it is avidya. Right? So when we're dealing with especially with Upanishads and that, they take aparavidya and just it's in ignorance. Because that's where it's situated. You know, it's right at that border of overlap. So, for the devotees, they're following the Shastra because it's coming from Krishna. And they want to please Krishna. So, he does things in connection with the Shastra. So, therefore, they like to use the Shastra as their preference for serving Krishna. So, that's aparavidya. Right? For using the outside knowledge, then it's avidya. Now, if you can connect it and use it in Krishna's service, then it takes on the nature of aparavidya, but it'll be an inferior form of aparavidya because the nature of it is not necessarily as easily connectable or engageable. Right? So the main point is connected to Krishna, then that particular body of knowledge, you know, knowledge and skills becomes aparavidya. And not. So that's why you see these smartas. They can be knowing, you know, Ayurveda or the rituals or Vastu or, you know, how you say grammar, any of these things, which are coming down from the scriptures. They're descending, right, from the Lord, but they're not seeing him in context of the Lord. So they're getting the effect of ignorance. Like that. It's just they're situated in goodness in their ignorance, while others are situated in, you know, passion and ignorance within their ignorance. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point. Aparavidya is connected to the Lord. It becomes useful. Not connected to the Lord. It's not. Of them, better people are engaged in the aparavidya than the avidya. Because then that environment is good for devotees. You know? Does that make sense? Like before, there were so many Ayurvedic doctors you could go to. You know, the medicines were available. They were making them themselves. You know, all these different things because people practiced the aparavidya. But they were in ignorance, but they practiced it. So it made it nice for devotees. You know, but as now they take up the practice in ignorance, then they give up the aparavidya and take up the ascending processes of knowledge. And so then the problem is now it's so much harder to find Ayurvedic doctors and proper medicine. You know, because before it was being done as a duty, and it maintained them. Now it's simply look at Ayurveda as only valuable if it makes money. Just like before, you go to Kerala, you get a massage, it was just a standard thing. Right? That's just the way it was. It's always been like that. But it was getting less and less people until some figured out, hey, it's marketing. You know, you market it to these upbeat, you know, guys to the, you know, the NRIs and stuff like that. Then people now will, you know, spend, you know, a lakh of rupees to get a session of massages, when before it would cost someone 5,000 rupees. You know, and that was mainly for the medicine and you know, just the running costs. You know what I'm saying? It's not that their hands now are golden, so it costs so much more. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the difference, the advantage of the opera over the ignorance. But the point is why opera vidya would be counted as ignorance is if you're approaching it from the ascending process, it's ignorance. If you're approaching from the descending process from Krishna, then it is, then it's not ignorance. Then it's knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. And descending, only Vaishnavas use the descending process. Right? Means those pious persons following the Vedas who accept, they're accepting the knowledge that's descending, but their approach to it is ascending. Well, the Vaishnavas approach the descending knowledge from the platform of descending. And so that's what creates what you're saying before. For devotees, those who see it in that way, it works very nicely. Those that don't, then that aspect of ascending, that will be giving them problem. You know, I mean, that will give problems. Because the ascending means then you're starting from yourself, not from Krishna. And so then the attachment to the mechanics, they'll always give problems. But if you're seeing it in connection with Krishna, then the one is that you actually see it in its proper form. It becomes, like you said, very simple, straightforward. The other, it becomes very complicated. Complicated means because then you have to deal with every little nuance of your material desires. Well, the other, if you deal with Krishna, because it's experience, right? That, you know, or experiential, is that your experience in just remembering and serving Krishna, you don't notice the little things. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you've done something on one part of the counter, moved to another part of the counter, and that, you know, then you're doing something, then you have to continue what you were doing before, but you're in a different part, so you've left the original tool somewhere else. So now, if you're in a very good mood and attitude, it's just, oh, okay, and then you just pick up the other things. But if you're not, it's, where are those things? You know, like that, you freak out. So that's the whole thing. It's all in the attitude. It's all in the experience. So if it's connected to Krishna, then the experience will improve. And if it's not, so that's how we tell how Krishna conscious, how much we're affected by the external. You know? And so we think, oh, but it's so much. It says it was more before. So be happy. We're just aware of what was there before. And so we see there's an effect. It's getting better. We're less affected. We're less. So that's why knowledge and detachment, that's a symptom of how you can tell. So, therefore, when we're talking in the Karma Shastras and all that, or in general, the apara vidya will be considered a very good thing, and ignorance is left. In other words, knowledge gained by the ascending process is rejected by those who accept the Vedas. That will be ignorance. Then that knowledge which is coming down from Shastra, that's apara vidya. It's a descending knowledge, and they'll accept it, though they're still applying it according to their own position for their own purpose. So they're still using ascending process, but the situation they're in is actually superior. Right? And they know paravidya is there, but, you know, paravidya is for when you get old and your teeth fall out and you can't do anything. When you can't run the business anymore and this and that, that's where you take up spiritual knowledge. You know, after your son's running the business and he's doing very well and he's married and they're grandchildren. Then you can talk about it. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. They know it's there, but they don't pay any attention to it. But what's being given is that in devotional, you deal with the paravidya from the beginning. And the aparavidya you're using anyway. Right? Does that make sense? But, so the point is to be transcendental doesn't mean that you can't use the transcendental. I mean, to be efficient and practical doesn't mean we can't see it according to the transcendental position, because it's an attitude. It's not the knowledge and skill. Right? If we take the transcendental, it's a knowledge and skill. Okay, I have a Shastra, so then I'm just going to talk about Shastra all day and that. How's that going to pay the bills and this and that? But that's not what we're talking about. It's a vision. It's how you see things. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's not more efficient to drive the car that you're out on a joyride than you're just following the rules and getting from point A to point B. It's not more efficient. So this idea is that no, unless I'm materially attached, it won't be efficient. But that's the mundane consciousness. We only do something because we're attached. So that's the mode of passion and ignorance. But the point is you can also function in goodness, which is not well appreciated. And generally you see, is there so much better? But because they don't talk about it. It's just like, let us say, you know, let's say we have two people that are in a similar, you know, have a similar knowledge and skills and a similar platform of ability. Okay? And so, and that ability is that of being, you know, noteworthy. The people, it's above average, so people would notice it. You know, it's quite exceptional. So then let's say, just, you know, taking a cliche here, we take, you know, let's say it's in business or something like that. You take the American businessman and you take the, you know, English businessman. Right? So then the American businessman is going to have this whole attitude and be telling you how he's this and that and whatever it is or what great things he's done, his milestones and all that. British guy won't say anything. Unless you ask him specifically, he's not going to, unless it's necessary in the conversation, he won't bring it up. So you'll never know. You know, unless you observe and things like that. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. This has a little bit more of the aspect of goodness. So you see, as these Indian gentlemen and all that, they're just taken as regular guys that come to the temple, they're humble and this and that, like that. But each one of those guys in the temple room, let's say like in Chopati, they're chanting japa, there aren't people in the movement that have that much money. You know? That know how to get the money. We have some people that have money. But they're not the ones that generated the money. But these guys know how to, from scratch, make the money. But they're just there humbly doing something. It's time to do something. You know, so, you know, it's time to, you know, it's like, say, job is finished. We're going to do something else. So then, you know, the other guys, you know, the brahmacharis get up and walk away and leave the mats. But these guys come, pick up the mats, put them on the side, getting ready for darshan. Right? So you just think he's just some ordinary guy, the guy with the attitude walking around, you know, he's the big guy. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So it won't be noticed. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the amount of people that are materially qualified, let's say in India. You know, the volume of it, you know, it's starting to be noticed a bit now. Right? But the point is they've always been like that. And so the Western world never noticed them. They can relate more to those who are from a background of more passion and ignorance. You know, those from the cultures of meat eaters and stuff like that. They'll relate to them. They'll set up alliances with them and everything with them. But India, they'll avoid. Because they can't relate to the goodness and just the simplicity. This guy is super simple and not necessarily overly sophisticated in his dealings. You know, personal dealings. But as far as business or anything else goes, you know, he's the best. Does that make sense? So in the West, it's that if you're good at something, you have to be sophisticated. Everything has to be all matched together. And if you're unsophisticated, means you're not good at anything. The Vedic is that you have two things. You have your occupation and you have your personal life. So personally, you may be quite a simple person. But as far as occupation go, you may be the best. And then you do have those, you know, who are good at both. You know, the Kshatriyas and Brahmins and that kind of caliber and stuff like that. You do have people that are on that same, that both are there. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you can take one of these local village boys, plunk him down in the West, come back after 5 years. He owns a house. Literally. You know? Like that. You know, you take a Westerner, plunk him down here, and after 5 years, he doesn't have diarrhea quite as bad as he used to. That's his progress. Right? So, that's the thing, is that we understand, so that simple guy now, but at the same time as, you know, being able to do things other than that. But now you take someone, let's say, is educated from the city and all that, then they go to the West, they can relate and deal with that whole social scene that's there. Does this make sense? So we're pointing out that there, that the activities and goodness, the culture and goodness, is not necessarily appreciated in the West. Right? So that's there across the board. So even within India, within that, those who are more sophisticated don't necessarily appreciate those who are not as sophisticated. Does that make sense? It's just a general rule. So that's the difficulty, is that we have to be able to appreciate the mode of goodness as a basic platform, not as a goal, just a basic platform. And then from there, we're trying to perform things in pure goodness. So in other words, I'm with the attitude and mentality of the Paravidya, but I'm not situated there so nicely yet, but I'll be situated in the platform, the Aparavidya. Right? And so then the environment, all these, you know, Rig Veda Adi things, you know, getting up in the morning, how you take a bath and how you brush your teeth and all these different things, we'll be using all that. And with that, we're trying to see it in connection with Krishna. And sometimes we see it more, sometimes less. But passionate ignorance we don't require. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that sometimes it's not relatable because there is no samskars, no impressions of that. We've never seen someone act in goodness. We've never seen someone act in a refined way. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Someone who's more eclectic, they've traveled around, like world travelers and stuff like that, they generally have much less of a problem. They're much more tolerant, they can deal, they can appreciate a wider range than that. But if people are just growing up only in their place with only their people, you know, within their particular group of friends, they have sometimes difficulty appreciating outside of that. Doesn't mean they have to, but many times they do. Yeah, so. So that's the thing, is it's a matter of experience. So when that experience goes beyond to a wider range that we can appreciate that there's different kind of cultural levels and this and that, then it makes it easier to appreciate, you know, the application in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, then it's black and white. Right? It's like Ayurveda is either Maya or it's spiritual. That's our two options. You know? So those who are hardcore and this and that, then it's all Maya. Right? And then, you know, for the practical vadis, you know, when they figure out you can make money off of it and stuff like that, or the scholar, and then he's got some knowledge that the others don't have, and then it becomes, now it's all spiritual. But the point is the Aparavidya, if you're Krishna conscious, then it's spiritual. You're not Krishna conscious. It's not. That's the difference. While chanting the holy name, you're spiritual or not, it's still spiritual. That's the difference. Paravidya is always spiritual, even if the individual is not. Aparavidya is spiritual, if the person's, even if the person is, and if not, they're not. But it's easier to connect, easier to see the connection. It gives a better result in goodness. Well, the avidya, that is always going to give some problems in passion and ignorance. Maybe practical, because getting something done, practical means passion. Because when practical people say practical, it doesn't mean everybody's satisfied, everybody's happy, we didn't bother anybody, it considered everybody, it considered the natures of everybody, and then how they all fit into that. That's not within the definition of practical. It's not even in the back in the book, in the, you know, how you say, the appendices. You know, it's just not there. People aren't considered. Practical means nothing to do with people. You use people, but it has nothing to do with the consideration of people. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So, this Upanishad vidyam cha vidut advidubhayam saha. That means what? Knowing apara and para, or what?
Yeah. Otherwise, how do you use it? It means if you only know the transcendental, then that's nice if you're situated on that platform, but if you only are dealing with the transcendental and not with any apara vidya, what's going to be your position? How, I mean, externally, how will you be acting? You'll be acting as an abhidhut. You understand? So you need to, that's knowledge, like varnashram, these things are known, and you see the Vaishnavas use them. That's the one aspect, because they use them for Krishna. The other aspect is where we're saying avidya is, you know what's avidya, so you know how to avoid it. Because otherwise someone will say, you know, it's a saying, oh yes, you know, so if we want to develop the community, then, you know, everybody's got to work harder to be nice and everything like that. We have to, you know, until devotees are nice and respect each other and love each other and help each other, then we're not going to have community. Have we heard this in a meeting before or not? Yeah. It means anytime you're talking community, you can say that 99.99% of the time that will be mentioned. But that was avidya. Because where does it come from? Nice, you know, care, you know, affection, regard. Where is that coming from? On what authority? How do you know that that works? Why do we say that that works? You be nice. Why do we say that works? Like in business, it doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you go to the personal trainer at the gym. Is he nice? Right? All those people that excel in this world that we respect, they all got there by not being nice. So then, on what platform is this coming from? Where's the authority for this? They're just saying it. They've read it somewhere. It's a value for them. They're upset that people don't behave nice. That's why they join Krishna consciousness. Right? So the aspect of artha, they were disturbed. And so therefore, then they want everybody to be nice. That's why they come to Krishna consciousness. But the problem is that anyone on artha, arthati, and jigyasu, you know, there's every chance that they could get distracted. So they don't even know what they're talking is ignorance in the capacity of artha. You know, in this, not artha meaning money. I mean, it is. They want gain, because you want, artha means you gain nice situations, you gain facilities. Right? So the emotional is also a facility. So not knowing the philosophy, they can't tell that what they're talking is that, because how long have they been talking this? Right? For at least 20 years or more, 25 years. Where are the communities that have all these nice qualities? Right? Not there. Why? Because it won't work. Because it has no basis, no authority. Now if we take from the Shastra, then Varnashram means everyone functions, they do their duties, therefore there's respect. That's the first point the Manu makes, is without respect, then you're not even going to have Varnashram. Right? That's the first thing taught to the Brahmachari. So based on that, that's why we have. And respect is defined by that. Anyone who's superior, you know, therefore somebody with devotion, someone with knowledge, someone with influence, family relatives, you know, that are senior, like that, someone with money, someone with influence, you know, like that, someone with age, greater. These are the basis of, means there's more than that, but at least this much minimum, you'll do okay if you follow that. So is what's being defined by being nice? No, because in the same sentence that they're saying everybody should be nice, they'll be going after whoever's the managerial authority. The same people. The people that are all nice, this, they're not the ones that support management. You understand? So that's why it won't work. Because it's ascending from where? It doesn't, so that's ignorance. So to be able to find that and define that, that's what it means. You can tell the difference between what's knowledge and what's ignorance. And knowledge here is saying it's in connection with the Supreme. The pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known, seen, and attained. Right? Known, seen, and attained. Right? It's called knowledge. All else is ignorance. So that means you know this is knowledge. Everything else is ignorance. So unless it's all connected to this, how it serves Krishna, the person, and pleases that him as a person. And that's what your endeavor is. Whatever you're dealing with is ignorance. You know, and that may not be a popular opinion. So then, according to Yusha Upanishad, what's the popular opinion? Ignorance. Right? So by false ego, which comes from ignorance, then we don't appreciate when our platform of ignorance is assailed. You know, it's pointed out. No, it's sacrosanct. Oh, no, but you shouldn't criticize. You know, you shouldn't this, you shouldn't that. Oh, okay, we shouldn't criticize, but you're criticizing that I'm criticizing. Isn't that criticism? You know, and in the next breath was that we're going to say about, you know, the leaders, you know, they don't understand. So is that not criticism? So that's the whole point is it means don't criticize anything that I am not criticizing. So then, that being self-centered, then they're only working on an inductive method. There is no question of knowledge coming down from the Lord. Because if it doesn't, the knowledge that comes down from the Lord, if it matches their inductive knowledge, it's okay. It's bona fide. Because they accept it. It's not deductive. So that's the other aspect. Then you can tell the difference. Like just say, know what is clean and know what is dirty. Or know what is clean and what's unclean. Then you'll be able to maintain cleanliness. So it's not that, oh, you go in and roll around the dirt. That's how you know uncleanliness. So you can define, you can tell the difference. Otherwise, then, because it has qualities. Means that if we take in the Western religion. Now, if someone is selfless and working for the benefit of everyone, right, within the religious community, would that not be considered that they're spiritual? Yeah, so that's the point. Just having a good quality and not being a rat bag, you're called spiritual. Right? In the Veda, that's called human. Then humans are supposed to be spiritual. So that's the thing. They can't even tell the difference what's spiritual and not. So the direct activities of devotional service, all devotees will be convinced about and clear that this is spiritual. How much they're committed to it or not, that's individual. But they'll all agree that that's spiritual. The problem is now when you get down to the good qualities, then that's where the confusion comes in. And then how do you define a quality? Right? Rupa Goswami's defining them. He says, what are the 64 qualities and beyond? And how that's used and how it's expressed. Does that make sense? You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is showing that. And so then we may have a difference of opinion about that. You know, because it's just popular. You know, before it was, you know, you were firm, you were strict, you had your personal values and you stuck to that, and that was considered a good thing. And now that, you know, it's not about you're not considering all everybody else's and their mental position, then you're not a nice guy now. Even though he'll be successful and all these other mental people won't. You know, so we're talking, we have to be successful, but we have to use this system that doesn't work, because it hasn't worked. It never has. You've always had different people, right? The successful people and not. And if you look at it, there's a common thing of what's successful and there's a common thing of what's not. I mean, they write books about it. Does that make sense? So vidyam cha means that we can tell the difference. We don't have to practice avidya, but we know what it is, and we can define it. Because it's not just, you know, we'll take it that breaking the four regular principles, that's ignorance. And for us, everything else is spiritual. No, that's vikarma. Right? Then there's karma. Then there's okarma. Right? Which is transcendental. You understand? Okarma. Because akarma is doing nothing. Akarma, no karma. Right? So akarma can be spiritual if it's done. It means you're not doing any material, you're only engaged in spiritual. Does that make sense? So if you're defining all four of them together, then you'll use vikarma, akarma, karma, and okarma. If you're not doing that, then you say vikarma, karma, and akarma. Because when you say akarma, it means that it's not material. That makes sense. Okarma means that it's beyond, transcendental.
Some internal.
No, it's there. It's in Gita. it's not used as much because it's just generally whatever comes up and is popular. Like nowadays, when's the last time you heard someone talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga? Not so much, but you go back 15 years, 20 years, ooh, that was the buzzword. You know, because it's a very important part of our philosophy. And before that time, the mid-90s, you never heard of it, even though it's right there in the Gita and Bhagavatam. So it's just, there's terms that, you know, like Sambandha Abhidaya and Prayojana, right? Bhagavatam, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita opens with that, using the words exactly, who catches it? So it's just what words are popular, that's what's used, and terms and concepts and that, and then other things aren't used. Is that okay?
Can we say that Deva Varnashram is a platform where people are getting the opportunity to execute Apara Vidya in connection with...
Daiva Varnashram is a platform in which you can engage Apara Vidya.
Yeah.
It's good. Because it's a platform that can hold all the other ones together. It means it's a religious platform which all the other religious processes can work with very nicely. You can situate it very nicely because you have to have interaction and all that. Mm-hmm. So the Daiva Varnashram system, it means it's the system in which all the living entities involved can interact with each other and they have a position. Mm-hmm. Now, within that, what detail what they're doing, how austere they are, how much they're studying, these kind of things, that will be individual, you know, just like their placement within the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question is about the advantage of being born in Indian culture. Nowadays, Indian government wants to create some restrictions for students from Brahmin and Kshatriya families for studying in medical university. Because as a doctor, they will get a high salary in India.
Yeah.
And mostly they need to study outside of India in another university. In our city we have approximately 1,000 Indian students from Brahmana and Kshatriya background. But their behavior in many times worse than behavior of local people. I mean they drink alcohol without doing any other bad things.
It's like teenagers. Teenagers are more crazy than adults, right? Because it's new to them. So it's the same thing, it's new to these guys. Because in India, they may not do that in their background, so they come outside and they think that that's what it's all about. You know, it's just like, what was it? You know, they see the movies or they see the television shows, you know, they put on from the Western, you know, kind of backgrounds. And so they take it that that's reality. As opposed to that's just entertainment. Like I once saw some Indian, you know, they were, how old were they? Probably, yeah, early 20s or something like that. And they were making some comments. Someone was doing something and they were making the comment that that's not how you should do it. You know? Because they had seen on some, you know, show that they didn't do like that. You know, it's just like in India, you know, husband and wife can cooperate and go on very nicely and that. You know, they'll have their disagreements, but it all works out. But if you ran a show like that, how far would that get? Probably wouldn't get past the pilot, right? Right? So there has to be total drama and insanity and this and breaking up and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And then it makes a show and people will watch it. Right? And so then, unfortunately, Indians, you know, being on that level a little gullible, you know, due to the background of goodness, then they think that this is like Shastra, when it's just entertainment. I mean, that'll never happen to one person. You know, so you take one family. All the insanity that happens to them wouldn't happen to a whole community. But it all happens to one family. But they don't discriminate.
South America is the best.
Sorry?
South America is the best in producing Muslims.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. No, they're the most intense. Because yeah. It's a little bit more like Indian, you know. It's like how Indian used to be, go in, you know, show them, you know, the looks like that. They used to do that also. Hollywood used to do that back in the 50s. Yeah, it's not now. Yeah. But then it was, but, you know. Before the billboards, when they were showing the movie, the people, they have all the faces, because there's more about the faces. Nowadays, it's just a scene, but there was all the faces that were involved. And they were, all the faces would be different colors. Yeah, yeah. Actually, different colors, you know, matching the mood and everything like that. You know, this guy was envious, so he's a little green. This was that, he's a little yellow. That was red. That was pink.
Like that. It was too subtle. Now it's all about the effects.
Yeah.
The computer graphics.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, before I had that personal. So does that make sense? So they're just, and that level means when it comes to, let's say, their knowledge and all that, you treat them on the level of what they're doing. But on the social level, you just treat them how you deal with teenagers. Because that's all they are. Just idiot kids that figured out that they're old enough they can drink and they think they're being so Western when they're just being stupid. Like that. So you can't take them seriously. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem, is just that when there's proper leadership, things go properly, and when there's not proper leadership, then things go crazy.
When they back to India,
Then their mother will give them a slap in the head, so then they won't do that. Yeah, like that.
Gradation.
Sorry?
There are gradations. First one goes to the slab, then comes the leather belt. And
yeah. Gradations.
Then comes the brick.
Huh?
Then comes the brick.
Therefore, some of them don't come back. Stay.
That's there also. If they get into it, and you know, they find some nice local girl, and then they'll stay, and this and that. You know, and so then it's a scene, and then everybody's flipping out, and you know, they don't want them to come back until there's grandchildren. And then at that point, then now they're welcome back and everything's fine. And all that. But you just have to wait. You know. I saw that one devotee here from, you know, more of kind of like that aristocratic background in the West and all that. And that and he had married an Indian girl. Like, his parents are freaking out, this, that, would have nothing to do with them. So then it says, and I told him, it says, don't worry. Once you have kids, everything will be fine, like that. Oh no, that's not possible. This and that. And sure enough, once they had kids, then they would go visit, and everybody was cool. You know, so.
Yeah.
Same with Krishna consciousness. It's all the same thing. Well, that was it, because they had become a devotee and they had married there. They become a devotee, that's bad enough. Then they, you know, came to India, that's more, and then they married an Indian girl, and oh my God, I'm freaking out. Okay. Anything else?
Doesn't apply to the brahmacharis.
So. Disadvantage on that one.
No, the brahmacharis won't. It's just, I guess then you just have to wait till they get old, where they can't function so much. And then suddenly.
And then they need you.
Yeah, then they need you. Then it's okay. But, doesn't apply.
If you actually have the culture to take care of them,
whereas
your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, but don't. That's always the fun part, is that it falls to the devotee to take care of the parents, because no one else will. They're too materialistic.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting like that. So we're going to the next page. We're not just sticking on the hill.
Hey, why not?
Okay.
Let's do that.
The following should be stated. The Lord is endowed with all qualities. By knowledge of the qualities, yena, one form or tattva is understood. That is knowledge, tajjnanam. Right? So you see, as Rupa Goswami is giving all the different qualities, then understanding that quality, then one aspect of tattva is understood, one aspect of Krishna. Right? Because we're, you know, in nectar devotion, then you're studying the aspects of vibhava. What is cause of the attractions and interactions between the devotees? So these qualities, then that's understood. Then there's an appreciation of that. And then that goes from attraction to attachment. Right? So that knowledge is tadgyanam. So if it's a resulting in that, that's knowledge. If it's just that we know these things, but it doesn't go forward in that, it's not exactly knowledge. What does, quote, that is knowledge, end quote, mean? Right? Because that's also, okay, you say that's knowledge. What do you mean by that's knowledge? Is he to be known as devoid of all difference by giving up all these qualities since they are not himself? Or is he to be known to be non-different, being the quality and possessor of the quality, one tattva, by achintya jnana? Right? So is it that these things are given up, like the Maya bodies, he has these qualities, and then these are all given up? Because even if they say unlimited and unchanging and all that, they say ultimately can't be described by words, so it's beyond that. Right? But then they won't use achintya jnana. They'll just say you can't know it. So they can't go beyond that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's say you're out of the water, you can't see what's in the water. You go in the water, you can see what's in the water. Or if you're in the water, unless you come out, you can't see what's on the land. Like if you're in the water and look out, you can get this little idea, you can see something, a beach or some trees or that. Because I guess the only one seeing that would be a piranha, right? Where you have a nice beach and nice coconut trees and all that. But, yeah. So, the point is, but they're thinking within that, you have to come out. So, here is that then that knowledge means you understand he has all qualities. These qualities are non-different from his sarup. So they're variation within his sarup, which are non-different from him. That's knowledge. Otherwise, then you'll have the thing, oh, Krishna wouldn't like that. Krishna won't accept that. Does that make sense? But it's all his. Does this make sense? So the thing is if it's something that's recommended, why wouldn't Krishna accept it since he's given it? But if we apply our own value on it, then now suddenly it's not. So that means then there's something separate. I was just thinking about it, that you have, let's say you had back in the, when was it? The whole time of the whole witch kind of thing, everyone being burned at the stake. I mean, in America it was a little later, but they hung them. They didn't burn them at that time. So I guess they had progressed, right? Salem, they would hang them.
Middle Ages.
Huh? Middle Ages, okay. So the Middle Ages, then someone's decided they're a witch, right? Why? Because they can do something a little bit better than anyone else. So they look a little bit better, or you just don't like the person. Right? So then the interesting thing is they're a witch. Now, to be aware, then because you know something that's beyond, not the regular thing, some special power, so it's gotten from the devil. But then they would have tests for the witch, right? Different marks on their bodies or this. Where did that science come from?
Witchcraft.
Yeah, so it's a science of witches. But using that, that's fine. You understand? So that's the whole thing. So use the same thing, because if it's subtle, it's subtle. So it's just, So it's just not being, so there's this idea there's something separate from God. God's created the world, but he's not in control of it, so someone else is running the place. So that kind of knowledge, that's not actual knowledge. Point is it's all non-different from Krishna. Then, what is the value of it? All this knowledge, all this activity, all these results, it has an advantage in how it is used in the service of that person who has all these qualities. Right? That's knowledge. So with that basis, that's achintya jnana. Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premana. Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Basadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2, Adhikarna 1, description of the form of Bhagavan. Page 78. Vyasti means he is the form of Sankarsana. Samasti means he is Vasudeva. His manifest form is the deity. The topic is then summarized. Okay, so this must be from this verse. The Lord is the form of Vasudeva and Sankarsana. He has a manifest form, the deity, and is also an unmanifest form. He is the Lord of all beings, the witness of all beings, the knower of all beings, and is endowed with all shaktis. He is called the Supreme Lord. So Vyasti means the difference, no? The samasti means together.
The entire thing is samasti, the complete whole. Vyasti is the differentiator.
Vyasti is the different?
Yeah, different. Becomes different. Okay. And samasti is the entire thing. Therefore, if we say Sankarshan Pratimyanirita.
Samasti means together, he said. Vyasti means the difference. So Vyasti, then we see Sankarsana. Of course, like Sankarsana, Pajumna, and Aniruddha, they're manifesting particular different qualities of the guna, of the, you know, of the six opulences. Right? And so those together, that's Vasudeva. Right? So he has the individual aspect, and he has all together. Right? So the individually, you can point out the different qualities and what they specifically can do, or how they're used, and then together, that's then how the pastimes go on. Because the Lord then has, he can do anything, right? He can be involved in any activity. So being involved in any activity, that's then Vasudeva. He performs the pastimes. Right? So then that'll be the samasti. The pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known, seen, and attained, is called knowledge, and all else is ignorance. Right, so to be able to understand the Lord, his pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is seen, right, by which he reveals himself through his shaktis, right, and by that then we attain the service of his lotus feet. That's knowledge. Anything else is considered ignorance. Does that make sense? So that means the whole point is that the Ichashakti of the Lord, attaining that position where we're pleasing the Lord, and that kind of aspect, that's knowledge. Then, if we're looking at the supporting elements, right, the Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha are doing, not seeing them connected with Vasudeva, that's ignorance. Does that make sense? That's where ignorance comes from. Does that make sense? Means if we see everything connected to Krishna, that's knowledge. But if we see anything not connected to Krishna, that's ignorance. Though everything is connected. Right? The Kriya and Jnana Shaktis are connected to the Lord, but they're connected by supporting the fulfillment of Krishna's desire, the Icha. So if we see the Kriya and Jnana separate from pleasing the Lord, then that's ignorance. Yes.
But according to this logic, it means that we are producing in ignorance.
The ignorance shakti is there in the Lord. The ajnana shakti is there. It just means that we are then under that control of that shakti. So in other words, basically what it's saying is everything connected to the Lord and seen in connection with the Lord to please in devotion, that is devotion. I mean, that is knowledge. Anything else is ignorance. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful, because we can be dealing with a branch of facts and figures and mechanical skills and all that, but if we don't see it connected to Krishna, its effect will be ignorance. But if we see the same thing connected to Krishna, to please Krishna and devotion, then it takes on the quality of knowledge. So that's the point. Is that knowledge will get you out of the material world. But if not, it's not enough that it's in the category of facts and figures that we can memorize and possibly apply. That doesn't make it knowledge. Does that make sense? You know. So that's the That's the point being made, is that when we see that totality of the Lord, of Vasudeva, and how he performs the path, he has all six opulences. Right? We know that Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha have all six, but they're specifically manifesting two each, because that's the uniqueness of that manifestation. Right? So when we see Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha in the context of Vasudeva, then it takes on the transcendental position. But if we see them separate from Vasudeva, then we're not seeing properly. Does that make sense? Just like anything. Any of the Lord's creation, any of his energies, we don't see it in connection with Krishna, then we're dealing with ignorance. Not that they're in ignorance, we're the ones in ignorance. You know? Does that make sense? Or, yeah? Yes.
To please the Lord, it's not that
difficult. Go ahead.
It's not that difficult, because it's simple and straightforward. However, you know, Munis, they study Shastra for such a long time. So why would they do that?
It means they're trying to gain something. But since they don't have the association of the pure devotees, they don't know actually what to look for. Does that make sense? So they have a goal in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? And most likely, if they're these great jnanis, and say it's going to be moksha. They're trying to free themselves from the miseries of the material world. Everyone's trying to free themselves. But you see, as most are trying to free themselves by removing an obstacle to enjoy. Then those who are intelligent, they understand it's the nature of the material world that you're going to be miserable. Right? So they give up that attempt. And they take up the attempt how to understand what is real knowledge to get ourselves out of the material world. They can elevate themselves up to that position of liberation. So they're out of the field of karma, because it's the field of karma that's giving them the misery. At least that's their understanding. They're not understanding is that, because they're looking at it, remove the misery, then they'll be what will be left is happiness. What we see is that just because I remove an obstacle doesn't mean I have happiness. Right? You know, you have to do something to get happiness. So that's the difficulty. They're not seeing that. So the jnani thinks that if I get rid of all the obstacles, then I'll be liberated. Yeah, you'll be liberated from the problem. It's just like, let's say I'm having a difficulty doing something. Like I want to cook and somehow or another I don't find the key to get in the kitchen. And then, you know, I go to the place where it normally is and it's not there. And I ask others and they say, oh, this person took it. And so where is he? Oh, he's supposed to be here, but he's not there because something happened. And so, you know, she just goes on and on and on this, trying to get this key. And so getting the key, then there's that moment of happiness that I remove the obstacle, because that's material happiness. Right? But he still hasn't cooked anything that's actually going to give any pleasure. So that's the mistake that's made, since material happiness is removing of pain. Then it's taken that liberation as the ultimate happiness. Right? Because if I remove a small obstacle, I get a small amount of happiness. I remove a bigger obstacle, I get a bigger amount of happiness. Right? Now, if I remove the obstacle of the material world, then their idea is that I will get the greatest happiness. But all you're doing is, you could say, it's the greatest neutral position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they don't actually know what's happiness. So without the association of the devotees, they won't know. Because even though the Veda will express it, they're thinking with material intelligence. They're using the ascending process. So they can't actually understand. But once you come in contact with the devotee, then immediately it becomes, like you said, very simple, very clear, very straightforward. And so these great sages, well, it'll be very easy for them. Like you see the four Kumaras. They come in contact with devotional service. And then immediately they're on the platform of pure devotion. You know, on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So for them, it's an advantage if they do get there, but then they have to give up their attachments to the jnana. And so we find, unless someone actually is liberated, that generally they don't do that. You know, because it's their identity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is anything, when we see it in the context of Krishna, then it becomes special. It becomes spiritual. We don't see it in the context of Krishna, then it's always going to be a problem. Doesn't matter what it is. That's why we have to be very, very careful. That's why Rupa Goswami opens with what's pure devotional service. Understanding that, then all these other points have meaning. Otherwise, then it's like the marriage party, you know, rowing the boat back to their village. Right? So that's the whole thing. When you come in contact with devotees, then this ocean of material suffering becomes reduced down to the size of a calf's footprint. Easy to step over. Anybody can step over a calf's footprint. Right? Even a baby. Right? So that's the thing. It's so perfect. But without it, it is an insurmountable ocean. And the only trouble you get for it is the trouble you put in. I mean, the only benefit you get is the trouble you put in. You know, so they don't really get anything solid. But, yes.
Yes, the other day you mentioned that even for the devotees, although we're trying to practice Shuddha Bhakti, however, we don't know ourselves, the underlying motive could be liberation, because when obstacles come in Krishna consciousness, we're not happy about it. Mm-hmm. And reading Bhagavatam and meditating on those pastimes, we think we don't want to be part of that place, because, you know, apparently they suffer and long time. So,
means if we're taking up devotional service, then in the beginning it's always going to have those aspects. You know, of Artha, Artharthi, Jigyasu, and Yana, it's always going to have these neophyte aspects. But because the soul, its nature is that of pure devotion, then the concept, then we can relate to it. We appreciate it. And so then we can make that effort for it. It doesn't mean that by our conditioning or impurities we don't have those background aspects. But that's the advantage when you come in contact with the bona fide guru. Then these other things aren't there, though underlying we may be doing it. Just like with a devotee, if you can point out in a way that they, you know, according to their position, they're acting for one of these, dharma, artha, karma, or moksha, then generally then they'll be the mentality to try to give that up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because their ultimate goal is pure devotion. So that's why they move forward. But it still requires the association of devotees. That's a constant. We're always in that association. That's how we're advancing. Because we see it means we're advancing from previous association, taking that instruction and functioning. And we're also seeing, you know, at present. So that's why it says that one is studying under the bona fide spiritual master. So that's why we have the acharyas have written commentaries on that. Because, like, you know, you read something and there's some point that sticks out for you, but the whole rest of it you may not remember, and the full, maybe that point that was discussed, you may only remember part of it. But then by studying again, then you understand more, you go deeper because of the service.
Yes.
So in the same way as that, associating with the devotees around us, then we start to see what's correct and what's not. We see that mood, that enthusiasm, you know, trying to go forward in Krishna consciousness. And so we become, in that way, we become inspired. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the point is like this. Now, we can look at it that the situations that we're in, we want nice situations.
Yeah.
But that's the point of religiosity. It produces nice situations.
Right?
Right? But the point is it just the situation, or we want to be happy in that situation?
In minds of many, situation means default happiness.
Yes, but when you go through it logically, that's why logic is used in these kind of things, is that we can be in a really nice situation and not be happy.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let us say, you know, you've just gotten away, you know, how you say, the grandchildren have been, or the children have been left at the grandparents' house, and you're going out for a few days, you know, like that. You go to some really fancy place, and, you know, all nice arrangement. You've been working on it for the last 6 months, like that. And you get there, and you're in this fabulous place. You know, you walk in, you know, the bed's there, so then you turn around and do one of those, you know, Jesus falls back on the bed, you know, thing, you know. And, you know. You know, the whole thing like that, and then you know, just as you're getting into it, you know, you've like that, you know, I say you've changed out of the, you say traveling clothes, gone in something, going to go out, then you get a call from the grandparents that, you know, the son, you know, fell over and broke his leg. Now how is that vacation going to go? The situation is perfect. That's already been established. So in other words, happiness is a state of mind, right? Because one situation for one person, that'll be wonderful. Just like, let's say, we take someone who is a outdoors person. So you put them out in the middle of some pristine environment, which means they're out in the middle of nowhere. They are in ecstasy. But you take someone else who's not an outdoor person, and it could be worse. You know, they'd rather be stuck in traffic in L.A. than there.
With Wi-Fi.
Huh?
At least with Wi-Fi.
At least Wi-Fi. Yes, if there's no Wi-Fi, okay, then I understand. Let the bears eat me. You know, if there's no Wi-Fi. Is that?
Yeah.
So it's a state of mind. So once we understand that, so in the beginning, yes, we don't see that at all because of ignorance. We just think because that's how we're trained. You know, it's like Pavlov and his dogs.
Pavlov, yes.
Yeah, you know, you ring the bell, they salivate, you know, like that. So it's like, you know, nice things you want because you think you'll be happy. That's how advertisement works. Right? You have this, you'll be happy. You know, they don't show... They don't show the continuation of that guy. You know? Like that. You know, so now what to do? You know, it's like he goes down the street, and as he goes down the street, then there's these 25 girls following him because of the deodorant he's using and all that. Great, now what happens when he gets to his car? Now what to do? 25 girls, they're not going to fit in your car. And then if you choose one of them, what are the others going to do? There may be a riot. You know, they might burn you in the car and the one that you got in the car with.
Give them the
deodorant. Yeah, they could just spray it on the head and walk down the street. That's a good solution. So that's the point, is that it's a state of mind. So now... we are, basically speaking, you can say in general, dependent upon a good situation that we appreciate being in. That being in that, then we can experience happiness. Right?
Yeah.
For us, by our particular conditioning, then what specific detail, you know, I mean, it's all going to be in eating, sleeping, maintaining, and defending, right? And having facility for that, basically. So, then it's a matter of when we have one that matches our conditioning, then we're going to be happy, right? But if we don't have those situations, we won't be happy. So we're dependent upon the situation, right? So now what's being talked about is the soul is independent. That means the devotees are independent. So that would mean that the soul being happy, being Atmarama, they're not dependent on the external situation. So that means no matter what situation you're in, you're happy. Right? So far up to this point, we're cool because it still takes on that, you know, impersonal kind of aspect.
Right.
Is that wherever I walk, wherever I go, I'm happy. I can see everything in relation to the Supreme, I'm happy. Okay? So that's a step up from the previous one, that I'm dependent upon a material situation, an arrangement. But now you're getting to the level of these great devotees, that even if the situation externally is unfavorable for your conditioning, you're still happy. Right? You're so independent that you can even be in a bad situation and you're happy. So that's what's being pointed out. We're looking, to, you know what I'm saying? Because we tend to judge everything, which is natural, by our impressions. So that's the idea, by hearing these stories and hearing their attitudes and the moods and prayers and the explanations of the acharyas, that we start to see that there's different perspective. And then we start to see from these different perspectives. Right? So as we study, then Krishna being pleased, we get purified. By being purified, since that's our interest, Krishna will reveal these deeper and deeper levels. So that's then what we're talking about, ananda. Ananda trumps happiness. Right? So happiness in the material world means I have the situation I want, having removed the obstacle. Right? Then, the neutral point, the liberation point, because that's karma. And we can relate a bit to the gyan part, the liberation in that I'll be happy because there's nothing bothering me. Nothing bothers me. It's all. But I'm looking at it in the way of, very neutral kind of things.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it comes to the point where ananda is that you go beyond that point by ananda. Because otherwise, by happiness, that's as far as you can get. But if you're on that platform from ananda, then it can go forward to the next. That's why we're saying liberation for some is an end. But for the devotees, it's the situation. And then it goes up from there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we have to see from a different perspective, because you'll see is that's the problem with all other schools other than Vaishnavism, is they're looking at it with this mundane perspective of happiness. And they're just taking it liberation, that's ananda. When, yes, you can be on the platform of ananda if you're a devotee. But if you're not a devotee, you're not on the platform of ananda. You're just on the platform, the most maximum you can get out of happiness, out of sukha. That's why they fall down into philanthropic work and other things, because they need some relationships, some kind of niceness, some qualities. Even though they talk no qualities, they need as a living entity. Because activities are performed by qualities. Right? Before, I think Rupa Goswami was explaining that you have activities and that's the inspiration. It means you have qualities. Because qualities means activity. Right? If Krishna is beautiful, then, and that's attractive, why? Because then you can interact with that beauty. Or Krishna is clever, and so you can interact with that cleverness. Right? Or Krishna is merciful, then you can interact with that. So it's not just he has the quality and that's it. Otherwise, it would be sankarsana. It would be, it would just be the position. But it's attractive because then something can be applied and you can get a result from that. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point. The qualities actually indicate activity. But we're taking it like devotees may say that, or anybody, it's coming from the karmis that, if everybody's nice, then the world will be a nice place. But nice is an experience. So unless there's interaction, how will you get the experience? It's not that just because there's niceness, it's there. Niceness has to be manifest. And you have to have experience of that niceness, then you get the effect of your goal of the happiness. So qualities have to be applied. Just having the quality isn't enough. Because Krishna has all the six opulences unlimitedly. But just having them, he's in the position of Atmarama. It's only when he applies it in rasa that then you have that, his ananda is greater. Does that make sense? So he's functioning as Shuka. He's always on the transcendental platform. But the point is just having something isn't enough. You have to be able to use it. Right? And then having it is also not, you have to have the knowledge and skill to be able to apply it. You know what I'm saying? People get something just because it's value. Others say it's value, you get it, but you can't do anything with it. So your happiness is just knowing that I have it. And if I can find someone else who just goes, wow, that's cool, then, you can share their happiness. But if they say, okay, let's do something, you don't know what to do with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good? Yes.
So can we say that on each level we have different kind of happiness? At the level of sat, there's certain happiness, then knowledge gives happiness, and then anant, it's a combined happiness of all of it.
Yes, that's why it says here, Vyasti is Samasti means he's Vasudev. Vyasti means it's just one aspect. Or in this case, two out of six.
Okay.
Right? So Vasudev means then it's all together. So that's the aspect, is when you're applying it. Because as Vasudev, he's applying it. He's the Lila Purush. Right? The others are giving the background. So Icha means it's an interaction. Right? So Kriya and Jnana means, Jnana means the situation. Kriya means the knowledge, means the situation, and then the knowledge and mood and attitude and everything. But it's not applied; it's neutral, right? It's static. Then, when you apply that, that's kriya. Then something's accomplished, and that accomplishment—that's the thing. Then can be the medium for happiness, right? But it all depends on the attitude. So the attitude is devotion, and the experience is devotional. The attitude is material, the experience will be material. So the same activity, if the attitude's material, the maximum you can get is happiness. But if the attitude's devotional, then you can get ananda. So, because they go together. That means the knowledge and skills applied will get you a physical result. Right? But it's the attitude that when that's applied, that's going to give whatever the particular experience is. You know, it's just like someone does something very expertly, but with so much ego, no one's very happy by it. But they do the same thing without that ego, then people are pleased. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the attitude's the main thing. So If you want to increase the quality of experience, you have to increase the quality of the attitude. Right? So you have to get it through the up to the fifth stage of consciousness. That attitude, that actually brings something important. The others, then they always give a temporary result. Does that work? Okay, we're good? Okay, the pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known. Right? Because we know him through his form. Right? Seen and attained, is called knowledge and all else is ignorance. Vishnu Purana 6.587. He is known by internal realization, seen directly and attained by complete cessation of ignorance. Right? So, complete cessation means, when you attain means now you're able to interact. Right, you're part of the pastime. So there's no ignorance at all. You see everything in connection with him. So when we say is that the devotee is only absorbed in Krishna exclusively and nothing else, that means there's no ignorance. Because where Krishna is, there's no ignorance. There's no Maya. So to that degree you're Krishna conscious, to that degree Maya is removed. Right? So when it's exclusive, then the removal is also, so there's no ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah. That knowledge is paravidya. Ajnana means aparavidya, which is included in ignorance. Right? So part of ignorance, then you have the aparavidya. And it's apara because it can be used in context of Krishna. That's the advantage of the Vedic material knowledge. Being apara, it's all in line with the transcendental. Right? It's just like you're taking it that Krishna's there, and then by his desire creates the material world. Okay, so now we're dealing with the transcendental, like that, and then, you know, from his glance, then you get the material creation. Like that, you see it in context of him, it's transcendental. But at the same time, as you get down to the Mahatattva, now you have the modes of nature and all that. Now, if you continue to see with Krishna, you're seeing transcendental knowledge. That'll be Vedanta, you know, the Shankya aspect. But if we're not seeing it connected to Krishna, now it becomes avidya, ignorance. Now, the Vedic, because it's following that line that's given of Paravidya all the way down, all the knowledge in the Veda is coming down from Paravidya. And you see it in that context, it maintains that nature. Right? But when you get into where it's just talking about the mechanics of things, the situations of things, the interaction of things, what the results those things get, that's called aparavidya. Because it means it's the knowledge that's not transcendental, but is usable in the Lord's service, right? So you're having that same line of knowledge, because it's a descending process. So that knowledge which descends from the para all the way down to the practical point we're dealing like that, then the mechanical side of it, that's aparavidya. Because all you have to do is apply that in devotion to the Lord, and you get the result in devotion. Now, that knowledge which is gained from the ascending process, right? Because it's not connected to the Lord, that's all ignorance. Does that make sense? So, it's all considered within this avidya. But that which is ascending is ignorance. That which is coming, the material that's coming from the descending, that's aparavidya. And the knowledge of this connection with the Lord, that descending knowledge, that's paravidya. Does that make sense? So that's why you see aparavidya is in the middle. Connected to Krishna, even though it may be material knowledge, it's giving you the result of the spiritual because of its connection. But the same knowledge not used in connection with Krishna, it is avidya. Right? So when we're dealing with especially with Upanishads and that, they take aparavidya and just it's in ignorance. Because that's where it's situated. You know, it's right at that border of overlap. So, for the devotees, they're following the Shastra because it's coming from Krishna. And they want to please Krishna. So he does things in connection with the Shastra. So therefore, they like to use the Shastra as their preference for serving Krishna. So that's aparavidya. Right? For using the outside knowledge, then it's avidya. Now, if you can connect it and use it in Krishna's service, then it takes on the nature of aparavidya, but it'll be an inferior form of aparavidya because the nature of it is not necessarily as easily connectable or engageable. Right? So the main point is connected to Krishna, then that particular body of knowledge, you know, knowledge and skills becomes aparavidya. And not. So that's why you see is these smartas. They can be knowing, you know, Ayurveda or the rituals or Vastu or, you know, how you say grammar, any of these things, which are coming down from the scriptures. They're descending, right, from the Lord, but they're not seeing him in context of the Lord. So they're getting the effect of ignorance. Like that. It's just they're situated in goodness in their ignorance, while others are situated in, you know, passion and ignorance within their ignorance. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point. Aparavidya is connected to the Lord, it becomes useful. Not connected to the Lord, it's not. Of them, better people are engaged in the aparavidya than the avidya. Because then that environment is good for devotees. You know, does that make sense? Like before, there were so many Ayurvedic doctors you could go to. You know, the medicines were available, they were making them themselves. You know, all these different things, because people practiced the aparavidya. But they were in ignorance, but they practiced it. So it made it nice for devotees. You know, but as now they take up the practice in ignorance, then they give up the aparavidya and take up the ascending processes of knowledge. And so then the problem is now it's so much harder to find Ayurvedic doctors and proper medicine. You know, because before it was being done as a duty, and it maintained them. Now it's simply looked at Ayurveda as only valuable if it makes money. Just like before, you go to Kerala, you get a massage, it was just a standard thing. Right? That's just the way it was. It's always been like that. But it was getting less and less people until some figured out, hey, it's marketing. You know, you market it to these upbeat, you know, guys to the NRIs and stuff like that. Then people now will, you know, spend, you know, a lakh of rupees to get a session of massages, when before it would cost someone 5,000 rupees. You know, and that was mainly for the medicine and, you know, just the running costs. You know what I'm saying? It's not that their hands now are golden, so it costs so much more. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the difference, the advantage of the opera over the ignorance. But the point is why opera vidya would be counted as ignorance is if you're approaching it from the ascending process, it's ignorance. If you're approaching it from the descending process from Krishna, then it's not ignorance. Then it's knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. And descending, only Vaishnavas use the descending process. Right? Means those pious persons following the Vedas who accept, they're accepting the knowledge that's descending, but their approach to it is ascending. Well, the Vaishnavas approach the descending knowledge from the platform of descending. And so that's what creates what you're saying before. For devotees, those who see it in that way, it works very nicely. Those that don't, then that aspect of ascending, that will be giving them problem. You know, I mean, that will give problems. Because the ascending means then you're starting from yourself, not from Krishna. And so then the attachment to the mechanics, they'll always give problems. But if you're seeing it in connection with Krishna, then the one is that you actually see it in its proper form. It becomes, like you said, very simple, straightforward. The other, it becomes very complicated. Complicated means because then you have to deal with every little nuance of your material desires. Well, the other, if you're dealing with Krishna, is its experience, right? That, you know, or experiential, is that your experience in just remembering and serving Krishna, you don't notice the little things. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you've done something on one part of the counter, moved to another part of the counter, and that, you know, then you're doing something, then you have to continue what you were doing before, but you're in a different part, so you've left the original tool somewhere else. So now, if you're in a very good mood and attitude, it's just, oh, okay, and then you just pick up the other things. But if you're not, it's, where are those things? You know, well, I like that, you freak out. So that's the whole thing. It's all in the attitude. It's all in the experience. So if it's connected to Krishna, then the experience will improve. And if it's not, so that's how we tell how Krishna conscious, how much we're affected by the external. You know? And so we think, oh, but it's so much. It says it was more before. So be happy. We're just aware of what was there before. And so we see there's an effect. It's getting better. We're less affected. We're less. So that's why knowledge and detachment, that's a symptom of how you can tell. So. So, therefore, when we're talking the Karma Shastras and all that, or in general, the Apara Vidya will be considered a very good thing, and ignorance is left. In other words, knowledge gained by the ascending process is rejected by those who accept the Vedas. That will be ignorance. Then that knowledge which is coming down from Shastra, that's Apara Vidya. It's a descending knowledge. And they'll accept it, though they're still applying it according to their own position for their own purpose. So they're still using ascending process, but the situation they're in is actually superior. Right? And they know paravidya is there, but, you know, paravidya is for when you get old and your teeth fall out and you can't do anything. When you can't run the business anymore and this and that, that's where you take up spiritual knowledge. You know, after your son's running the business and he's doing very well and he's married and they're grandchildren. Then you can talk about it. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the difficulty. They know it's there, but they don't pay any attention to it. But what's being given is that in devotional, you deal with the paravidya from the beginning. And the aparavidya you're using anyway. Right? Does that make sense? But, so the point is to be transcendental doesn't mean that you can't use the transcendental. I mean, to be efficient and practical doesn't mean we can't see it according to the transcendental position, because it's an attitude. It's not the knowledge and skill. Right? If we take the transcendental, it's a knowledge and skill. Okay, I have a Shastra, so then I'm just going to talk about Shastra all day and that. How's that going to pay the bills and this and that? But that's not what we're talking about. It's a vision. It's how you see things. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's not more efficient to drive the car that you're out on a joyride than you're just following the rules and getting from point A to point B. It's not more efficient. So this idea is that no, unless I'm materially attached, it won't be efficient. But that's the mundane consciousness. We only do something because we're attached. So that's the mode of passion and ignorance. But the point is you can also function in goodness, which is not well appreciated. And generally you see, is there so much better? But because they don't talk about it. It's just like, let us say, you know, let's say we have two people that are in a similar, you know, have a similar knowledge and skills and a similar platform of ability. Okay? And so, and that ability is that of being, you know, noteworthy. The people, it's above average, so people would notice it. You know, it's quite exceptional. So then let's say, just, you know, taking a cliche here, we take, you know, let's say it's in business or something like that. You take the American businessman and you take the, you know, English businessman. Right? So then the American businessman is going to have this whole attitude and be telling you how he's this and that and whatever it is or what great things he's done, his milestones and all that. British guy won't say anything. Unless you ask him specifically, he's not going to, unless it's necessary in the conversation, he won't bring it up. So you'll never know. You know, unless you observe and things like that. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. This has a little bit more of the aspect of goodness. So you see, as these Indian gentlemen and all that, they're just taken as regular guys that come to the temple, they're humble and this and that, like that. But each one of those guys in the temple room, let's say like in Chopati, they're chanting japa, there aren't people in the movement that have that much money. You know? That know how to get the money. We have some people that have money. But they're not the ones that generated the money. But these guys know how to, from scratch, make the money. But they're just there humbly doing something. It's time to do something. You know, so, you know, it's time to, you know, it's like, say, job is finished. We're going to do something else. So then, you know, the other guys, you know, the brahmacharis get up and walk away and leave the mats. But these guys come, pick up the mats, put them on the side, getting ready for darshan. Right? So you just think he's just some ordinary guy, the guy with the attitude walking around, you know, he's the big guy. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. And so it won't be noticed. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the amount of people that are materially qualified, let's say in India. You know, the volume of it. You know, it's starting to be noticed a bit now. Right? But the point is they've always been like that. And so the Western world never noticed them. They can relate more to those who are from a background of more passion and ignorance. You know, those from the cultures of meat eaters and stuff like that. They'll relate to them. They'll set up alliances with them and everything with them. But India, they'll avoid. Because they can't relate to the goodness and just the simplicity. This guy is super simple and not necessarily overly sophisticated in his dealings. You know, personal dealings. But as far as business or anything else goes, you know, he's the best. Does that make sense? So in the West, it's that if you're good at something, you have to be sophisticated. Everything has to be all matched together. And if you're unsophisticated, you're not good at anything. The Vedic is that you have two things. You have your occupation and you have your personal life. So personally, you may be quite a simple person. But as far as occupation go, you may be the best. And then you do have those, you know, who are good at both. You know, the Kshatriyas and Brahmins and that kind of caliber and stuff like that. You do have people that are on that same, that both are there. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you can take one of these local village boys, plunk him down in the West, come back after 5 years. He owns a house. Literally. You know? Like that. You know, you take a Westerner, plunk him down here, and after 5 years, he doesn't have diarrhea quite as bad as he used to. That's his progress. Right? So, that's the thing, is that we understand, so that simple guy, now, but at the same time as, you know, being able to do things other than that. But now you take someone, let's say, is educated from the city and all that, then they go to the West, they can relate and deal with that whole social scene that's there. Does this make sense? So we're pointing out that there, that the activities and goodness, the culture and goodness, is not necessarily appreciated in the West. Right? So that's there across the board. So even within India, within that, those who are more sophisticated don't necessarily appreciate those who are not as sophisticated. Does that make sense? It's just a general rule. So that's the difficulty, is that we have to be able to appreciate the mode of goodness as a basic platform, not as a goal, just a basic platform. And then from there, we're trying to perform things in pure goodness. So in other words, I'm with the attitude and mentality of the Paravidya, but I'm not situated there so nicely yet, but I'll be situated in the platform, the Aparavidya. Right? And so then the environment, all these, you know, Rig Veda Adi things, you know, getting up in the morning, how you take a bath and how you brush your teeth and all these different things, we'll be using all that. And with that, we're trying to see it in connection with Krishna, and sometimes we see it more, sometimes less. But passion and ignorance we don't require. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that sometimes it's not relatable because there is no samskars, no impressions of that. We've never seen someone act in goodness. We've never seen someone act in a refined way. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Someone who's more eclectic, they've traveled around, like world travelers and stuff like that, they generally have much less of a problem. They're much more tolerant, they can deal, they can appreciate a wider range than that. But if people are just growing up only in their place with only their people, you know, within their particular group of friends, they have sometimes difficulty appreciating outside of that. Doesn't mean they have to, but many times they do. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is it's a matter of experience. So when that experience goes beyond to a wider range that we can appreciate that there's different kind of cultural levels and this and that, then it makes it easier to appreciate, you know, the application of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, then it's black and white. Right? It's like Ayurveda is either Maya or it's spiritual. That's our two options. You know? So those who are hardcore and this and that, then it's all Maya. Right? And then, you know, for the practical bodies, you know, when they figure out you can make money off of it and stuff like that, or the scholar, and then he's got some knowledge that the others don't have, and then it becomes, now it's all spiritual. But the point is the Aparavidya. If you're Krishna conscious, then it's spiritual. You're not Krishna conscious. It's not. That's the difference. While chanting the holy name, you're spiritual or not, it's still spiritual. That's the difference. Paravidya is always spiritual, even if the individual is not. Aparavidya is spiritual, if the person is, and if not, they're not. But it's easier to connect, easier to see the connection. It gives a better result in goodness. Well, the avidya, that is always going to give some problems in passion and ignorance. Maybe practical, because getting something done, practical means passion. Because when practical people say practical, it doesn't mean everybody's satisfied, everybody's happy, we didn't bother anybody, it considered everybody, it considered the natures of everybody, and then how they all fit into that. That's not within the definition of practical. It's not even in the back in the book, in the, you know, how you say, the appendices. You know, it's just not there. People aren't considered. Practical means nothing to do with people. You use people, but it has nothing to do with the consideration of people. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So, this is Upanishad. Vidyam avidyam cha vidota vidobhayam saha. That means what? Knowing apara and para. Or what
it, yeah, otherwise how do you use it? It means if you only know the transcendental, then that's nice if you're situated on that platform, but if you only are dealing with the transcendental and not with any aparavidya, what's going to be your position? Externally, how will you be acting? You'll be acting as an avatu. You understand? So you need to, that's knowledge, like varnasha, these things are known, and you see the Vaishnavas use them. That's the one aspect. because they're using for Krishna. The other aspect is where it's saying avidya is, you know what's avidya, so you know how to avoid it. Because otherwise someone will say, you know, they just say, oh yes, you know, so if we want to develop the community, then, you know, everybody's got to work harder to be nice and everything like that. We have to, you know, until devotees are nice and respect each other and love each other and help each other, then we're not going to have community. Have we heard this in a meeting before or not? Yeah. It means anytime you're talking community, you can say that 99.99% of the time that will be mentioned. But that was avidya. Because where does it come from? Nice, you know, care, you know, affection, regard, where does that coming from? On what authority, how do you know that that works? Why do we say that that works? You be nice, why do we say that works? Like in business, it doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you go to the personal trainer at the gym, is he nice? Right? Not all those people that excel in this world that we respect, they all got there by not being nice. So then, on what platform is this coming from? Where's the authority for this? They're just saying it. They've read it somewhere. It's a value for them. They're upset that people don't behave nice. That's why they join Krishna consciousness. Right? So the aspect of artha, they were disturbed. And so therefore, then they want everybody to be nice. That's why they come to Krishna consciousness. But the problem is that anyone on artha, arthati, and jigyasu, you know, there's every chance that they could get distracted. So they don't even know what they're talking is ignorance in the capacity of artha. You know, in this, not artha meaning money. I mean, it is. They want gain, because you want, artha means you gain nice situations, you gain facilities. Right? So the emotional is also a facility. So not knowing the philosophy, they can't tell that what they're talking is that, because how long have they been talking this? Right? For at least the last, at least 20 years or more, 25 years. Where are the communities that have all these nice qualities? Right? Not there. Why? Because it won't work. Because it has no basis, no authority. Now if we take from the Shastra, then Varnasha means everyone functions, they do their duties, therefore there's respect. That's the first point the Manu makes, is without respect, then you're not even going to have Varnasha. Right? That's the first thing taught to the Brahmachari. So based on that, that's why we have. And respect is defined by that. Anyone who's superior, you know, therefore somebody with devotion, someone with knowledge, someone with influence, family relatives, you know, that are senior, like that, someone with money, someone with influence, you know, like that, someone of age, greater. These are the basis of, means there's more than that, but at least this much minimum, you'll do okay if you follow that. So is what's being defined by being nice? No, because in the same sentence that they're saying everybody should be nice, they'll be going after whoever's the you know, the managerial authority. The same people. The people that are all nice, this, they're not the ones that support management. You understand? So that's why it won't work. Because it's ascending from where? It doesn't. So that's ignorance. So to be able to find that and define that, that's what it means. You can tell the difference between what's knowledge and what's ignorance. And knowledge here is saying it's in connection with the Supreme. The pure, supreme, faultless form, devoid of imperfections, by which he is known, seen, and attained. Right? Known, seen, and attained. Right? It's called knowledge. All else is ignorance. So that means you know this is knowledge. Everything else is ignorance. So unless it's all connected to this, how it serves Krishna, the person, and pleases that him as a person, and that's what your endeavor is. Whatever you're dealing with is ignorance. You know, and that may not be a popular opinion. So then, according to Yusha Upanishad, what's the popular opinion? Ignorance. Right? So by false ego, which comes from ignorance, then we don't appreciate when our platform of ignorance is assailed. You know, it's pointed out. No, it's sacrosanct. Oh, no, but you shouldn't criticize. You know, you shouldn't this, you shouldn't that. Oh, okay, we shouldn't criticize, but you're criticizing that I'm criticizing. Isn't that criticism? You know, and in the next breath, was that we're going to say about, you know, leaders, you know, they don't understand. So is that not criticism? So that's the whole point. Is it means don't criticize anything that I am not criticizing. So then, that being self-centered, then they're only working on an inductive method. There is no question of knowledge coming down from the Lord. Because if it doesn't, the knowledge that comes down from the Lord, if it matches their inductive knowledge, it's okay. It's bona fide. Because they accept it. It's not deductive. So that's the other aspect. Then you can tell the difference. Like just saying, know what is clean and know what is dirty. Or know what is clean and what's unclean. Then you'll be able to maintain cleanliness. So it's not that, oh, you go in and roll around the dirt. That's how you know uncleanliness. So you can define, you can tell the difference. Otherwise, then, because it has qualities. Means that if we take in the Western religion. Now, if someone is selfless and working for the benefit of everyone, right, within the religious community, would that not be considered that they're spiritual? Yeah, so that's the point. Just having a good quality and not being a rat bag, you're called spiritual. Right? In the Veda, that's called human. Then humans are supposed to be spiritual. So that's the thing. They can't even tell the difference what's spiritual and not. So the direct activities of devotional service, all devotees will be convinced about and clear that this is spiritual. How much they're committed to it or not, that's individual. But they'll all agree that that's spiritual. The problem is now when you get down to the good qualities, then that's where the confusion comes in. And then how do you define a quality? Right? Rupa Goswami is defining them. He says, what are the 64 qualities and beyond? And how that's used and how it's expressed. Does that make sense? You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is showing that. And so then we may have a difference of opinion about that. You know, because it's just popular. You know, before it was, you know, you were firm, you were strict, you had your personal values and you stuck to that, and that was considered a good thing. And now that, you know, it's not about you're not considering all everybody else's and their mental position, then you're not a nice guy now. Even though he'll be successful and all these other mental people won't. You know, so we're talking, we have to be successful, but we have to use the system that doesn't work, because it hasn't worked. It never has. You've always had different people, right? The successful people and not. And if you look at it, there's a common thing of what's successful and there's a common thing of what's not. I mean, they write books about it. Does that make sense? So vidyam cha means that we can tell the difference. We don't have to practice avidya, but we know what it is, and we can define it. Because it's not just, you know, we'll take it that breaking the four regular principles, that's ignorance. And for us, everything else is spiritual. No, that's vikarma. Right? Then there's karma. Then there's okarma. Right? Which is transcendental. You understand? Okarma. Because akarma is doing nothing. Akarma, no karma. Right? So akarma can be spiritual if it's done. It means you're not doing any material, you're only engaged in spiritual. Does that make sense? So if you're defining all four of them together, then you'll use vikarma, akarma, karma, and okarma. If you're not doing that, then you say vikarma, karma, and akarma. Because when you say akarma, it means that it's not material. That makes sense. Okarma means that it's beyond, transcendental.
Some
internal. No, it's there. It's in Gita. It's not used as much because it's just generally whatever comes up and is popular. Like nowadays, when's the last time you heard someone talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga? Not so much, but if you go back 15 years, 20 years, oh, that was the buzzword. You know, because it's a very important part of our philosophy. And before that time, the mid-90s, you never heard of it, even though it's right there in the Gita and Bhagavatam. So it's just, there's terms that, you know, like Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, right? Chaitanya Charitamrita opens with that, using the words exactly. Who catches it? So it's just what words are popular, that's what's used, and terms and concepts and that, and then other things aren't used. Is that okay?
Can we say that Deva Varnashram is a platform where people are getting the opportunity to execute Apara Vidya in connection with...
Deva Varnashram is a platform in which you can engage Apara Vidya. It's good. Because it's a platform that can hold all the other ones together. It means it's a religious platform which all the other religious processes can work with very nicely. You can situate it very nicely because you have to have interaction and all that. Mm-hmm. So the Daiva Varnashram system, it means it's the system in which all the living entities involved can interact with each other and they have a position. Mm-hmm. Now, within that, what detail what they're doing, how austere they are, how much they're studying, these kind of things, that will be individual, you know, just like their placement within the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question is about advantage of being born in Indian culture. Nowadays, Indian government wants to create some restrictions for students from Brahmin and Kshatriya families who study in the medical university, because as a doctor they will get a high salary in India.
Yeah.
And mostly they need to study outside of India in another university. In our city we have approximately 1,000 Indian students from Brahmana and Kshatriya background. But their behavior many times worse than behavior of local people. I mean they drink alcohol without doing any other bad things.
It's like teenagers. Teenagers are more crazy than adults, right? Because it's new to them. So it's the same thing, it's new to these guys. Because in India they may not do that in their background, so they come outside and they think that that's what it's all about. You know, it's just like, what was it? You know, they see the movies or they see the television shows, you know, they put on from the Western, you know, kind of backgrounds, and so they take it that that's reality as opposed to that's just entertainment. Like I once saw some Indian you know, they were, how old were they, probably early 20s or something like that, and they were making some comments, someone was doing some of these, and they were making the comment that that's not how you should do it, you know, because they had seen on some, you know, show that they didn't do like that. You know, it's just like in India, you know, husband and wife can cooperate and go on very nicely and that. You know, they'll have their disagreements, but it all works out. But if you ran a show like that, how far would that get? Probably wouldn't get past the pilot, right? Right? So there has to be total drama and insanity and this and breaking up and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And then it makes a show and people will watch it. Right? And so then, unfortunately, Indians, you know, being on that level a little gullible, you know, due to the background of goodness, then they think that this is like Shastra, when it's just entertainment. I mean, that'll never happen to one person. You know, so you take one family. All the insanity that happens to them wouldn't happen to a whole community. But it all happens to one family. But they don't discriminate. Sorry?
South Americans are the best in producing Muslims.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. No, they're the most intense. Yeah. Because it's a little bit more like Indian, you know. It's like how Indian used to be, you go in, you know, show the, you know, and the looks like that. They used to do that also. Hollywood used to do that back in the 50s. Yeah, it's not now. But then it was, you know. Before the billboards, when they were showing the movie, the people, they have all the faces, because there's more about the faces. Nowadays it's just a scene, but there was all the faces that were involved. And all the faces would be different colors. Yeah, yeah. Actually different colors, you know, matching the mood and everything like that, you know. This guy was envious, so he's a little green, this was that, he's a little yellow, that was red, that was pink. Like
that was too subtle. Now it's all about the effects.
Yeah.
The computer graphics.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, before I had that personal... So does that make sense? So that just in that level means when it comes to, let's say, their knowledge and all that, you treat them on the level of what they're doing. But on the social level, you just treat them how you deal with teenagers. Because that's all they are. Just idiot kids that figured out that they're old enough they can drink and they think they're being so Western when they're just being stupid. Like that. So you can't take them seriously. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem, is that when there's proper leadership, things go properly, and when there's not proper leadership, then things go crazy.
When we go to India, they
yeah, then their mother will give them a slap in the head, so then they won't do that. Yeah, like that.
Gradation.
Sorry?
There are gradations. First one goes to the slab, then comes the leather belt.
Yeah. Gradations.
Then comes the brick.
Huh?
Then comes the brick.
Therefore, some of them don't come back. Stay.
That's there also. If they get into it, and you know, they find some nice local girl, and then they'll stay, and this and that. You know, and so then it's a scene, and then everybody's flipping out, and you know, they don't want them to come back until there's grandchildren. And then at that point, then now they're welcome back and everything's fine. And all that. But you just have to wait. You know. I saw that one devotee here from, you know, more of kind of like an aristocratic background in the West and all that. And that and he had married an Indian girl. Like, parents are freaking out, this, that, would have nothing to do with them. So then it says, and I told him, it says, don't worry. Once you have kids, everything will be fine, like that. Oh no, that's not possible. This and that. And sure enough, once they had kids, then they would go visit, and everybody was cool. You know, so.
Yeah.
Same with Krishna consciousness. It's all the same thing. Well, that was it, because they had become a devotee and they had married there. They become a devotee, that's bad enough. Then they, you know, came to India, that's more, and then they married an Indian girl, and oh my God, I'm freaking out. Okay. Anything else?
Doesn't apply to brahmacharis. So.
Disadvantage on that
option
one.
Doesn't work.
No, brahmacharis won't. It's just, I guess then you just have to wait till they get old, or they can't function so much. And then suddenly.
And then they need you.
Yeah, then they need you. Then it's okay. doesn't apply.
If you actually have the culture to take care of them, whereas your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, but don't. That's always the fun part, is that it falls to the devotee to take care of the parents, because no one else will. They're too materialistic.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting like that. So going to the next page, we're not just sticking on the hill.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Let's do that.
The following should be stated. The Lord is endowed with all qualities. By knowledge of the qualities, yena, one form or tattva is understood. That is knowledge, tajgyanam. Right, so he sees Rupa Goswami's giving all the different qualities. Then understanding that quality, then one aspect of tattva is understood, one aspect of Krishna. Right, because we're, you know, in nectar devotion, and then you're studying the aspects of vibhava. What is cause of the attractions and interactions between the devotees? So these qualities, then that's understood. Then there's an appreciation of that. And then that goes from attraction to attachment. Right? So that knowledge is tadgyanam. So if it's a resulting in that, that's knowledge. If it's just that we know these things, but it doesn't go forward in that, it's not exactly knowledge. What does, quote, that is knowledge, end quote, mean? Right? Because that's also, okay, you say that's knowledge. What do you mean by that's knowledge? Is he to be known as devoid of all difference by giving up all these qualities since they are not himself? Or is he to be known to be non-different, being the quality and possessor of the quality, one tattva, by achintya jnana? Right? So is it that these things are given up, like the Maya bodies, he has these qualities and then these are all given up? Because even if they say unlimited and unchanging and all that, they say ultimately can't be described by words, so it's beyond that. right? But then they won't use a chinta jnana. They'll just say it's you can't know it. So they can't go beyond that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say you're out of the water, you can't see what's in the water. You go in the water, you can see what's in the water. Or if you're in the water, you know, unless you come out, you can't see what's on the land. Like if you're in the water and look out, you can get this little idea, you can see something, a beach or some trees or that. You know, because I guess the only one seeing that would be a piranha, right? Where you have a nice beach and nice coconut trees and all that. But, yeah. So, the point is, but they're thinking within that, you have to come out. So, here is that then that knowledge means you understand he has all qualities. These qualities are non-different from his surup. So they're variation within his surup, which are non-different from him. That's knowledge. Otherwise, then you'll have the thing, oh, Krishna wouldn't like that. You know, Krishna won't accept that. You know? Does that make sense? But it's all his. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
You know? So, the thing is if it's something that's recommended, why wouldn't Krishna accept it, since he's given it? But if we apply our own value on it, then now suddenly it's not. So that means then there's something separate. I was just thinking about it, that you have, let's say you had back in the, when was it? You know, the whole time of the whole witch kind of thing, everyone being burned at the stake. I mean, in America it was a little later, but they hung them. They didn't burn them at that time. So I guess they had progressed, right? Salem, they would hang them.
Middle Ages,
okay. So the Middle Ages, then someone's decided they're a witch, right? Why? Because they can do something a little bit better than anyone else. So they look a little bit better, or you just don't like the person. Right? You know? So, then the interesting thing is they're a witch. Now, to be a witch, then because you know something that's beyond, not the regular thing, some special power, so it's gotten from the devil. But then they would have tests for the witch. Right, you know, different marks on their bodies, or this. Where did that science come from?
Witchcraft.
Yeah, so it's a science of witches. That using that, that's fine. You understand? So that's the whole thing. Is to use the same thing, because if it's subtle, it's subtle. So it's just yeah. So it's just not being. So there's this idea. There's something separate from God. God's created the world, but he's not controlling it, so someone else is running the place. So that kind of knowledge, that's not actual knowledge. Point is it's all non-different from Krishna. Then, what is the value of it? All this knowledge, all this activity, all these results, it has an advantage in how it is used in the service of that person who has all these qualities. Right? That's knowledge. So with that basis, that's achintya jnana. Right? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.